And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. 18 candidates are running for local office in Juneau this year. Candidates had until yesterday to file to run for 4 open assembly seats and 2 open school board seats in the October 3rd election. This year's pool of candidates is far more crowded than last year's, when 5 incumbents ran unopposed and automatically won re-election. As of Monday's deadline, candidates running for the 2 open area-wide assembly seats are Paul Kelly, Ivan Nance, Nathan Nano Brooks, Joanne Wallace, Ella Adkisson, Michelle Stewart Morgan, Emily Mesh, Doreen Lorenz, Laura Martinson McDonald, and Jeff Jones. The candidate with the most votes in that race will win a 3-year term. The runner-up will finish the remaining 2 years of the seat occupied by Carol Treem until she resigned earlier this month. In District 1, incumbent Alicia Hughes-Scandes is running for re-election against Joe Geldhoff. In District 2, incumbent Christine Wall is running against David L. Morris. Both of those seats are full 3-year terms. 4 candidates are running for 2 open seats on the school board. Incumbent Brian Holst is running for re-election against Paige Sipniewski, Brittany Choney Hayward, and David Noon. The top 2 candidates will win 3-year terms. Voting in Juneau's by-mail election begins in mid-September. And when Americans walk into a multi-story building, they usually say they're on the first floor. That's not the case in Alaska's state capitol. KTOO's Katie Anastas found out why for this installment of Curious Juneau.
Capitol tour guide Kirk Smith gets this question all the time.
This building is sort of interesting in the way the floors are labeled. It has a very European feel to it. Right now you are not on the first floor. You are on the ground floor.
Smith pointed out Art Deco details in the main entrance of the building.
I also like to refer to the architectural style that's in use here as early 20th century American post office.
The Capitol was built in 1931. That was before statehood, so it originally served as a federal and territorial building. A post office was on the second story.
But you notice that the streets on either side of us are very steep, so there is an entrance to the first floor in that back corner, and that was the entrance into the post office.
Juneau's steep streets made it possible to put the post office's entrance on the street level. So the architects called that the first floor and called the one below it the ground floor. The doorway is still there today on Seward Street, about halfway up the block between 4th and 5th. But the post office is long gone. When Alaska became a state in 1959 and the building became the capital, the post office and other federal agencies moved to the Juneau Federal Building.
There's nothing of it left. You know, it would be nice if there was like an antique post office box or a teller window or something, but there's really nothing there. You can actually go in and out through that door, and it just looks like a hallway. So it's too bad.
Architect Wayne Jensen did find one remnant of the old post office. A few years ago, he oversaw seismic upgrades to the Capitol building.
When we did the demolition, we found a door that was kind of closed into one of the walls. I don't remember if it said post office on it, but that was the one thing we did find.
Jensen says putting the post office on the first floor makes sense.
The ground floor isn't as large as the other floors because it goes back into the mountain, back into the hill, and so it's truncated a little bit. And plus it has the boiler rooms and all those things that are more, you know, they're not really occupiable spaces.
According to the building's original floor plans, the door to Seward Street was an employee entrance, and the one on 5th Street was the public entrance. The post office lobby and workroom took up the entire east wing of the first floor.
I know stories, you know, people who lived here in the 50s, 60s, they would go there, you know, every day to get their mail, and it became a social area where you'd walk into the lobby and, you know, get your mail.
Over the years, Juneau residents have worked to keep the Capitol here. In fact, they made the construction in 1931 possible. Congress didn't allocate enough money to buy the whole block where the building stands today. So Juneau residents raised the rest of it.
And that was something that the community put together. Said, well, if the feds can't do it, we'll do it ourselves.
The post office may be a nearly forgotten piece of the building's history. But it's why today's visitors still need to pay extra attention to which floor they're on inside the Capitol. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Do you have your own Curious Juneau question? Ask us at ktoo.org/curious, and we'll have one of our reporters look into it. Juneau local Aiden Key's new book, Trans Children in Today's Schools, gives a comprehensive look at what transgender kids are experiencing and at what parents and educators can do to support them through their transitions. Key is the founder of Gender Diversity, an advocacy organization. KTOO sat down with Key to talk about the book and what led him to write it. He says his path to writing the book started more than 2 decades ago.
I stepped in over 25 years ago. It's been quite a journey. I'd say the first 10 years were really stepping in and having conversations with medical, mental health practitioners, speaking at universities, things like that. And then probably a good decade into that was when I discovered the families who were wanting to support their gender-diverse children. And they're asking me for help and guidance, and I'm busy looking at them thinking that the fact that you are stepping in to support your kid, and first of all, that your younger child could speak up and articulate gender identity differences is pretty amazing. And, oh, wow, I don't know what to tell you. Let's see if we can't figure that out together. So that was a real game changer for me to then think about how might I be able to help support those families and their kids. And quite a learning journey since then.
I'm curious, how has educating youth, parents, teachers about gender diversity evolved over time in the last 25 years?
Mm-hmm. As time progresses, what has happened is that there's more understanding. There's more information at people's fingertips. That principal who calls knows that the other principals in their school district have navigated this also, so they can make that call. How'd that go for you? What are the things you did? What did you encounter? So there is a progression that is continuing and frankly building steam in a way that makes it difficult for the rest of us to keep up. Mm-hmm. So also I will say that it has become more politically divisive. People are bringing faith values into the question. There is unfortunate and misrepresentative connotations of sexuality coming into the conversations. Those are not the discussions that are happening in schools with kids. But that's, again, the misconceptions that adults have.
There's a quote that you included in the book that stuck out to me. And it was Adrienne Rich: when someone with the authority of a teacher describes the world around you and you are not in it, there's a moment of psychic disequilibrium, as if you looked into a mirror and saw nothing. That stuck out to me a lot. Is that something that you've seen in a lot of young people that you've encountered who just don't see themselves in curriculum or in the classroom? And do you think that's changing?
I think about my time at Juno Douglas High School and my years before that. And I didn't see gay or lesbian kids. And I certainly did not see trans kids. So they don't exist. I discover later in life that they do exist. These people do exist. And I meet them when I'm older as an adult. Did they not exist until some magic moment of reaching adulthood? No. So we just didn't bring in those representations. We didn't make room for them. We didn't talk about those things. We are doing something quite different today. And I have been really impressed with the Juno School District and many other districts across the U.S. who are saying, gosh, we need to look after all of our kids. That includes those who are transgender or non-binary.
That is one thing that really stands out to me, too, is you've been doing this work for so long. And yet I would say that the book is full of patience and compassion for everyone who is just starting this journey of awareness. And that really stood out to me.
It's the way forward. If I'm not compassionate and respectful of the people, of any person's experience in this time, how are they going to get past that? What would I want if I was feeling challenged or having ideas or thoughts that I wanted to put on the table? Do I want somebody to shut me down? Do I want them to pass judgment? No, I don't. So that's the real work. And I don't know. I think we can do that work. I'm busy experiencing that on a daily basis. When we do create that environment, then we have some good conversations that are practical and comprehensive. If we just pull back and decide I'm on one side of an issue and you're on the other side, then we're stuck.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to sit with me and speak with me about this.
Absolutely. Thanks for reading the book.
This is KTOO.